"'It'd be terrible for the city if anything happened to him,' said Carrot. Vimes saw nothing but innocent concern behind Carrot's forthright stare. "'It would, wouldn't it?' he said. "'Anyway, it's under control. You said there's been another murder. At the Dwarf Bread Museum, someone killed Mr. Hopkinson with his own bread. Made him eat it? Hit him with it, sir,' said Carrot reproachfully. "'Battle bread, sir.' "'Is he the old man with the white beard?' "'Yes, sir. You remember, I introduced you to him when I took you to see the Boomerang Biscuit Exhibition.' Angua thought she saw a faint wince of recollection speed guiltily across Vimes's face. "'Who's going around killing old men?' he said to the world at large. "'Don't know, sir. Constable Angua went plain clothes.' Carrot waggled his eyebrows conspiratorially, "'and couldn't find a sniff of anyone. And nothing was taken.' This is what it was done with. The battle bread was much larger than an ordinary loaf. Vimes turned it over gingerly. Dwarfs throw it like a discus, right? Yes, sir. At the Seven Mountains Games last year, Snorri Shieldbiter took the tops off a line of 6 hard-boiled eggs at 50 yards, sir, and that was with just a standard hunting loaf. But this is, well, it's a cultural artifact. We haven't got the baking technology for bread like this anymore. It's unique. "'Valuable?' "'Very, sir. Worth stealing? You'd never be able to get rid of it. Every honest dwarf would recognise it.' "'Hm. Did you hear about that priest being murdered on Misbegot Bridge?' Carrot looked shocked. "'Not old Father Tubalcheck. Really?' Vimes stopped himself from asking, "'You know him, then?' because Carrot knew everyone. If Carrot were to be dropped into some dense tropical jungle, it'd be, "'Hello, Mr. Runs Swiftly Through the Trees. Good morning, Mr. Talks to the Forest. What a splendid blowpipe. And what a novel place for a feather.' "'Did he have more than one enemy?' said Vimes. "'Sorry, sir. Why more than one? I should say the fact that he had one is obvious, wouldn't you?' "'He was a nice old chap,' said Carrot. "'Hardly stirred out. Spent all his time with his books. Very religious. I mean, all kinds of religion. Studied them. Bit odd, but no harm in him. Why should anyone want to kill him? Or Mr. Hopkinson, a pair of harmless old men. Vimes handed him the battle bread. We shall find out. Constable Angua, I want you to have a look at this one. Take Corporal Littlebottom, he said. He's been doing some work on it. "'Angua's from Uberwald, too, Littlebottom. "'Maybe you've got friends in common, that sort of thing.' Carrot nodded cheerfully. Angua's expression went wooden. "'Ha! Hedrekgar de watch sher tut as!' said Carrot. "'Ha! Angua to Constable Angua kahar behak bahar shid kar kadak!' "'Welcome, Corporal Smallbottom. This is Constable Angua.' "'Angua, show Smallbottom how well you're learning dwarfish.' "'Angua appeared to concentrate. "'Grr-duk, d-b-booz-dr-ak,' she managed. "'Carrot laughed. "'You just said small, delightful mining tool of a feminine nature.' "'Cheery stared at Angua, who returned the stare blankly while mumbling, "'Well, dwarfish is difficult if you haven't eaten gravel all your life.' "'Cheery was still staring. "'Thank you,' he managed. "'I'd better go and tidy up.' "'What about Lord Vetinari?' said Carrot. "'I'm putting my best man on that,' said Vimes. "'Trustworthy, reliable, knows the ins and outs of this place like the back of his hand. "'I'm handling it, in other words.' Carrot's hopeful expression faded to hurt puzzlement. "'Don't you want me to?' he said. "'I could—' "'No. Indulge an old man. I want you to go back to the watch-house and take care of things.' "'What things?' Everything. Rise to the occasion. Move paper around. There's that new shift rotor to draw up. Shout at people. Read reports. Carrot saluted. Yes, Commander Vimes. Good. Off you go, then. And if anything happens to Vetinari, Vimes added to himself as the dejected Carrot went out, no one will be able to say you were anywhere near him. The little grill in the gate of the Royal College of Arms snapped open to the distant accompaniment of brayings and grunts. Yes? Said a voice. What dost thee want?
I am Corporal Nobbs, said Nobby.
An eye applied itself to the grill. It took in the full, dreadful extent of the godly handiwork that was Corporal Nobbs.
Are you, the baboon? We've had one on order for "No, I've come about some coat with arms," said Nobby.
"You?" said the voice. The owner of the voice made it very clear that he was aware there were degrees of nobility from something above kingship, stretching all the way down to commoner, and that as far as Corporal Nobbs was concerned, an entirely new category, commonist, perhaps, would have to be coined.
"I've been told," said Nobby miserably, "it's about this ring I got."
"Go round the back door," said the voice.
Cheery was tidying away the makeshift equipment he'd set up in the privy when a sound made him look round. Angua was leaning against the doorway.
"What do you want?" he demanded.
"Nothing. I just thought I'd say don't worry. I won't tell anyone if you don't want me to."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"I think you're lying."
Cheery dropped a test tube and sagged onto a seat.
"How could you tell?" he said. "Even other dwarfs can't tell. I've been so careful."
"Shall we just say I have special talents?" said Angua.
Cheery started to clean a beaker distractedly.
"I don't know why you're so upset," said Angua. "I thought dwarfs hardly recognised the difference between male and female anyway. Half the dwarfs we bring in here under number 23 are female, I know that, and they're the ones that are hardest to subdue."
"What's a number 23?
"Running, screaming at people while drunk and trying to cut their knees off," said Angua. "It's easier to give them numbers than write it down every time. Look, there's plenty of women in this town that'd love to do things the dwarf way. I mean, what are the choices they've got? Barmaid, seamstress, or someone's wife? Well, you can do anything the men do."
"Provided we do only what the men do," said Cheery.
Angua paused.
"No," she said, "I see. Yes, I know that tune."
"I can't hold an axe," said Cheery. "I'm scared of fights. I think songs about gold are stupid. I hate beer. I can't even drink dwarfishly. When I try to quaff, I drown the dwarf behind me."
"I can see that could be tricky," said Angua. "I saw a girl walk down the street here and some men whistled after her. And you can wear dresses with colours."
"Oh, dear," Angua tried not to smile. "How long have lady dwarfs felt like this? I thought they were happy with the way things are."
"Oh, it's easy to be happy when you don't know any different," said Cheery, bitterly. "Chainmail trousers are fine, if you've never heard of lingerie."
"Lingerie? Oh, yes," said Angua. "Lingerie, yes."
She tried to feel sympathetic and found that she was, really, but she did have to stop herself from saying that at least you don't have to find styles that can easily be undone by pause.
"I thought I could come here and get a different kind of job," Cheery moaned. "I'm good at needlework, and I went to see the Guild of Seamstresses, and—"
She stopped and blushed behind her beard.
"Yes," said Angua, "lots of people make that mistake."
She stood up straight and brushed herself off.
"You've impressed Command of Arms, anyway. I think you'll like it here. Everyone's got troubles in the watch. Normal people don't become policemen. You'll get on fine."
"Command of Arms is a bit—" Cheery began.
"He's okay when he's in a good mood. He needs to drink, but he doesn't dare to these days. You know, one drink is too many, two is not enough. And that makes him edgy. When he's in a bad mood, he'll tread on your toes and then shout at you for not standing up straight."
"You're normal," said Cheery, shyly. "I like you."
Angua patted her on the head.
"You say that now," she said, "but when you've been around here for a while, you'll find out that sometimes I can be a bitch."
"What's that?"
"What?" "That painting with the eyes."
"Or 2 points of red light," said Cheery.
"Oh, yeah?"
"It's the last thing Father Tubalcheck saw, I think," said the dwarf.
Angua stared at the black rectangle. She sniffed.
"There it is again."
Cheery took a step backwards.
"What? What?"
"Where's that smell coming from?"
Angua demanded.
"Not me," said Cheery hurriedly.
Angua grabbed a small dish from the bench and sniffed at it.
"This is it. I smelled this at the museum. What is it?"
"It's just clay. It was on the floor in the room where the old priest was killed," said Cheery. "Probably it came off someone's boot."
Angua crumbled some of it between her fingers.
"I think it's just potter's clay," said Cheery. "We used to use it at the Guild for making pots," she added, just in case Angua hadn't grasped things. "You know, crucibles and things. This looks like someone tried baking it but didn't get the heat right. See how it crumbles?
Pottery, said Angua. I know a potter. She glanced down at the dwarf's iconograph again. Please, no, she thought. Not one of them. The front gate of the College of Arms, both front gates, were swung open. The two heralds bobbed excitedly around Corporal Nobbs as he tottered out.
"Has your lordship got everything he requires?"
said Nobby.
"If we can be of any help whatsoever." "Any help at all?" "Sorry about your boots, my lord, but the wyvern's been ill. It'll brush off no trouble when it dries."
Nobby tottered off along the lane.
"He even walks nobly, wouldn't you say? More nobly than nobly, I think. It's disgusting that he's a mere corporal, a man of his breeding."
Igneous the Troll backed away until he was up against his potter's wheel.
"I never done it," he said.
"Done what?" said Angua. Igneous hesitated. Igneous was huge and, well, rocky. He moved around the streets of Ankh-Morpork like a small iceberg, and, like an iceberg, there was more to him than immediately met the eye. He was known as a supplier of things, more or less any kind of things, and he was also a wall, which was the same as a fence, only a lot harder and tougher to beat. Igneous never asked unnecessary questions, because he couldn't think of any.
"Nothing," he said finally.
Igneous had always found the general denial was more reliable than the specific refutation. "Glad to hear it," said Angua. "Now, where'd you get your clay from?" Igneous's face crinkled as he tried to work out where this line of questioning could possibly go.
"I got receipts," he said. "Every bit properly paid for."
Angua nodded. It was probably true. Igneous, despite giving the appearance of not being able to count beyond 10 without ripping off someone else's arm, and having an intimate involvement in the city's complex hierarchy of crime, was known to pay his bills. If you were going to be successful in the criminal world, you needed a reputation for honesty. "Have you seen any like this before?" she said, holding out the sample.
It's clay," said Igneous, relaxing a little. "I see clay all the time. It don't have no serial number. Clay's clay. Got lumps of it out the back. You make bricks and pots and stuff out of it. There's lots of potters in this town, and we all got the stuff. Why you want to know about clay?"
"Can't you tell where it came from?" Igneous took the tiny piece, sniffed it, and rolled it between his fingers.
"This is crank," he said, looking a lot happier now that the conversation was veering away from more personal concerns. "That's like crappy clay, just good enough for them lady potters with dangly earrings what make coffee mugs what you can't lift with both hands."
He rolled it again.
"Also, it got a lot of grog in it. That spits of old pots, all smashed up real small, makes it stronger. Any potter got loads of stuff like this."
He rubbed it again.
"This has been sort of heated up, but it ain't properly baked."
"But you can't say where it came from?"
"Out of the ground is the best I can do, lady," said Igneous.
He relaxed a little now it appeared that inquiries were not to do with such matters as a recent batch of hollow statues and subjects of a similar nature. As sometimes happened in these circumstances, he tried to be helpful.
"Come and have a look at this."
He loped away. The watchmen followed him through the warehouse, observed by a couple of dozen cautious trolls. No one liked to see policemen up close, especially if the reason you were working at Igneous's place was that it was nice and quiet and you wanted somewhere to lie low for a few weeks. Besides, while it was true that a lot of people came to Ankh-Morpork because it was a city of opportunity, sometimes it was the opportunity not to be hung, skewered, or dismantled for whatever crimes you'd left behind in the mountains.
"Just don't look," said Angua.
"Why?" said Cheery.
"Because there's just us, and there's at least 2 dozen of them," said Angua, "and all our clothes were made for people with full sets of arms and legs."
Igneous went through a doorway and out into the yard behind the factory. Pots were stacked high on pallets, bricks were curing in long rows, and under a crude roof were several large mounds of clay. said Igneous generously. Clay.
Is there a special name for it when it's piled up like that? Said Cheery timorously. She prodded the stuff.
Yeah, said Igneous. That's technically what we calls a heap.
Angua shook her head sadly. So much for clues. Clay was clay. She'd hoped there were all different sorts, and it turned out to be as common as dirt. And then Igneous helped the police with their inquiries.
"Do you mind if you goes out the back way?" he mumbled. "Yous make the people nervous, and I get pots I can't sell."
He indicated a pair of wide doors in the rear wall, big enough for a cart to get through. Then he fumbled in his apron and produced a large key ring. The padlock on the gate was big and shiny and new.
"You were afraid of theft?" said Angua.
"No, lady, that's unfair," said Igneous. "Someone broke the old lock when they pinched some stuff 3-4 months ago."
"Disgusting, isn't it?" said Angua. "Makes you wonder why you pay your taxes, I expect."
In some ways, Igneous was a lot brighter than, say, Mr. Ironcrust. He ignored the remark.
"It was just stuff," he said,
ushering them towards the open gate as speedily as he dared.
"Was it clay they stole?" said Cheery.
"It don't cost much, but it's the principle of the thing," he said. "It beat me why they bothered. It come to something when half a ton of clay can just walk out the door."
Angua looked at the lock again. "Yes, indeed," she said distantly. The gate rattled shut behind them. They were outside in an alley.
"Fancy anyone stealing a load of clay," said Cheery. "Did he tell the watch?"
"I shouldn't think so," said Angua. "Wasps don't complain too loudly when they're stung. Anyway, Detritus thinks Igneous is mixed up with smuggling slab to the mountains, and so he's itching for an excuse to have a poke around in here. Look, this is still technically my day off."
She stepped back and peered up at the high spiked wall around the yard.
"Could you bake clay in a baker's oven?" she said.
"Oh, no.
Doesn't get hot enough?"
"No, it's the wrong shape. Some of your pots would be baked hard, while others would still be green. Why'd you ask?"
"Why did I ask?" Angua thought. "Oh, what the hell?
Fancy a drink?"
"Not ale," said Cheery quickly. "And nowhere where you have to sing while you drink, or slap your knees."
Angua nodded understandingly.
"Somewhere, in fact, without dwarfs?"
Yes.
"Where we're going," said Angua, "that won't be a problem." The fog was rising fast. All morning it had hung around in alleys and cellars. Now it was moving back in for the night. It came out of the ground and up from the river and down from the sky, a clinging, yellowish, stinging blanket, the river Ankh in droplet form. It found its way through cracks and, against all common sense, managed to survive in lighted rooms, filling the air with an eye-watering haze and making the candles crackle. Outdoors, every figure loomed, every shape was a menace. In a drab alley off a drab street, Angua stopped, squared her shoulders, and pushed open a door. The atmosphere in the long, low, dark room altered as she stepped inside. A moment of time rang like a glass bowl, and then there was a sense of relaxation. People turned back in their seats. Well, they were seated. It was quite likely they were people. Cheery moved closer to Angua.
"What's this place called?"
she whispered.
"It hasn't really got a name," said Angua, "but sometimes we call it Beus."
"It didn't look like an inn outside. How did you find it?"
"You don't. You gravitate to it."
Cheery looked around nervously. She wasn't sure where they were, apart from somewhere in the cattle market district, somewhere up a maze of alleys. Angua walked to the bar. A deeper shadow appeared out of the gloom.
"Hello, Angua," it said in a deep, rolling voice. "Fruit juice, is it?"
"Yes, chilled."
"And what about the dwarf?"
"She'll have him raw,"
said a voice somewhere in the gloom. There was a ripple of laughter in the dark. Some of it sounded altogether too strange to Cheery. She couldn't imagine it issuing from normal lips.
"I'll have a fruit juice too," she quavered.
Angua glanced at the dwarf. She felt oddly grateful that the remark from the darkness seemed to have gone entirely over the small bullet head. She unhooked her badge and with care and deliberation laid it down on the counter. It went palink. Then Angua leaned forward and showed the iconograph to the barman. If it was a man. Cheery wasn't sure yet. A sign over the bar said, "Don't you ever change."
"'You know everything that's going on, Igor,' Angua said. "'Two old men got killed yesterday, and a load of clay got stolen from Igneous the Troll recently. "'Did you ever hear about that?'
"'What's that to you?'
"'Killing old men is against the law,' said Angua. "'Of course, a lot of things are against the law, so we're very busy in the watch. "'We like to be busy about important things. "'Otherwise, we have to be busy about unimportant things. "'Are you hearing me?' "'The Shadow considered this.
"'Go and take a seat,' it said. "'I'll bring your drinks.'
Angua led the way to a table in an alcove. The clientele lost interest in them. A buzz of conversation resumed.
"'What is this place?'
Cheery whispered.
"'It's a place where people can be themselves,' said Angua slowly. "'People who have to be a little bit careful at other times, you know?'
"'No.'
Angua sighed.
"'Vampires, zombies, bogeymen, ghouls, oh my, the under—' She corrected herself. "'The differently alive,' she said. "'People who have to spend most of their time being very careful, not frightening people. "'Fitting in. "'That's how it works here. "'Fit in, get a job, don't worry people, "'and you probably won't find a crowd outside with pitchforks and flaming torches. "'But sometimes it's good to go where everybody knows your shape.'
Now that Cheery's eyes had grown accustomed to the low light, she could make out the variety of shapes on the benches. Some of them were a lot bigger than human. Some had pointy ears and long muzzles.
"'Who's that girl?' she said.
"'She looks normal.'
"'That's Violet. She's a tooth fairy, and next to her is Schleppel, the bogeyman.'
In the far corner, something sat huddled in a huge overcoat under a high, broad-brimmed, pointed hat.
"'And him? That's Old Man Trouble.' said Angua. If you know what's good for you, you don't mind him.
Any werewolves here?
One or two, said Angua.
I hate werewolves.
Oh?
The oddest customer was sitting by herself at a small round table. She appeared to be a very old lady in a shawl and a straw hat with flowers in it. She was staring in front of her with an expression of good-natured aimlessness, and in context looked more frightening than any of the shadowy figures.
"'What is she?'
Cheery hissed.
"'Her? Oh, that's Mrs. Gammage.
"'And what does she do?'
"'Do? Well, she comes in here most days for a drink and some company. "'Sometimes they have a sing-song, old songs, that she remembers. "'She's practically blind. "'If you mean, is she an undead? No, she isn't. "'Not a vampire, werewolf, zombie, or a bogeyman. "'Just an old lady.'
A huge, shambling, hairy thing paused at Mrs. Gammage's table and put a glass in front of her.
"'Port and lemon, there you goes, Mrs. Gammage,' it rumbled.
"'Cheers, Charlie,' the old lady cackled. "'How's the plumbing business?'
"'Doing fine, love,' said the bogeyman and vanished into the gloom.
"'That was a plumber?' said Cheery.
"'Of course not. I don't know who Charlie was. He probably died years ago, but she thinks the bogeyman is him, and who's going to tell her different?
You mean she doesn't know this place is...
Look, she's been coming here ever since the old days when it was the Crown and Axe, said Angua. No one wants to spoil things. Everyone likes Mrs. Gammage. They watch out for her, help her in little ways.
How?
Well, I heard that last month someone broke into her hovel and stole some of her stuff.
That doesn't sound helpful.
And it was all returned next day, and a couple of thieves were found in the shades with not a drop of blood left in their bodies.
Angua smiled, and her voice took on a mocking edge. You know, you get told a lot of bad things about the undead, but you never hear about the marvellous work they do in the community. Igor the barman appeared. He looked more or less human, apart from the hair on the back of his hands and the single, unbifurcated eyebrow across his forehead. He tossed a couple of mats on the table and put their drinks down.
"'You're probably wishing this was a dwarf bar,' said Angua. She lifted her beer mat carefully and glanced at the underside.
Cheery looked around again. By now, if it had been a dwarf bar, the floor would be sticky with beer, the air would be full of flying quaff, and people would be singing. They'd probably be singing the latest dwarf tune, Gold, 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 or one of the old favourites like Gold, 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 or the all-time biggie, Gold, Gold, Gold. In a few minutes the first axe would have been thrown.
"'No,' she said, "'it could never be that bad.'
"'Drink up,' said Angua. "'We've got to go and see, something.'
A large, hairy hand grabbed Angua's wrist. She looked up into a terrifying face, all eyes and mouth and hair.
"Hello, Schlitzen," she said calmly.
"I'm hearing where there's a baron who's really unhappy about you," said Schlitzen, alcohol crystallizing on his breath.
"That's my business, Schlitzen," said Angua. "Why don't you just go back behind your door like the good bogeyman that you are?"
"He's saying where you're disgracing the old country."
"Let go, please," said Angua. Her skin was white where Schlitzen was gripping her.
Cheery looked from the wrist to the bogeyman's shoulder. Rangy though the creature was, muscles were strung along his arm like beads on a wire.
"You're wearing a badge," it sneered. "What's a good wee?"
Angua moved so fast, she was a blur. Her free hand pulled something from her belt and flipped it up and onto Schlitzen's head. He stopped and stood, swaying back and forth gently, making faint moaning sounds. On his head, flopping down around his ears like the knotted hanky of a style-impaired seaside sunbather, was a small square of heavy material. Angua pushed back her chair and grabbed the beer mat. The shadowy figures around the walls were muttering.
"Let's get out of here," she said. "Igor, give us half a minute and then you can take the blanket off him. Come on."
They hurried out. The fog had already turned the sun into a mere suggestion, but it was vivid daylight compared to the gloom in Beers.
"What happened to him?" said Cheery, running to keep up with Angua's stride.
"Existential uncertainty," Angua said. "He doesn't know whether he exists or not. It's cruel, I know, but it's the only thing we've found that works against bogeymen. Blue, fluffy blanket for preference," she noted Cheery's blank expression. "Look, bogeymen go away if you put your head under the blankets. Everyone knows that, don't they? So if you put their head under a blanket..."
"Oh, I see. Oh, that's nasty."
"He'll feel all right in 10 minutes.
Angua skimmed the beer mat across the alley.
"What was he saying about a baron?"
"I wasn't really listening," said Angua carefully.
Cheery shivered in the fog, but not just from the cold.
"He sounded like he came from Uberwald, like us. There was a baron who lived near us, and he hated people to leave."
"Yes.
The whole family were werewolves. One of them ate my second cousin."
Angua's memory spun in a hurry. Old meals came back to haunt her from the time before she'd said, "No, this is not the way to live. A dwarf, a dwarf." No, she was pretty sure she'd never... The family had always made fun of her eating habits.
"That's why I can't stand them," said Cheery. "Oh, people say they can be tamed, but I say, once a wolf, always a wolf. You can't trust them. They're basically evil, aren't they? They could go back to the wild at any moment, I say."
"Yes, you may be right."
"And the worst thing is, most of the time they walk around looking just like real people."
Angua blinked, glad of the twin disguises of the fog and Cheery's unquestioning confidence.
"Come on, we're nearly there."
"Where?"
"We're going to see someone who's either our murderer or who knows who the murderer is."
Cheery stopped.
"But you've got only a sword and I haven't even got that."
"Don't worry, we won't need weapons."
"Oh, good.
They wouldn't be any use."
"Oh,